Are you looking to make a podcast? Well, if you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First off, it's free. Nothing is better than free. Am I right? Anchor provides creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more services. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, which is very refreshing for very fresh, new podcasts looking to get their start. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Welcome back to the swamp, my friends. Today we are going to be exploring within National Forest. These stories are pretty creepy and downright unexplainable. If you have a story that you would like to share in a future video, be sure to submit your story at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I would love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. It's stories like yours that help keep this channel going. Now, without further ado, let's get into these creepy National Forest stories that'll keep you out of your local national park. My name is Daniel, and I live near the Sequoia National Forest in California. I've lived here most of my life, and I've been to this forest many times. It's a beautiful place, and nature is a wonderful place to be. I prefer it to the humdrum nature of my office job. I travel quite a bit for work, and having an office job, well, anyone with one understands how monotonous it can be, even if you actually love your job. I say this to explain how wonderfully freeing it is by getting a chance to go hiking through the forest during the weekends and even on vacations. I have a family now. But back in 2006, I was single, and I was 24 years old. This is also when my story takes place. As I stated earlier, I've lived out here for quite some time, and I've enjoyed many a hike. I enjoyed it more, however, around this time. It was around this time I met an older man who called himself Walt. Walt looked to be in his 70s or 80s, but he was quite spry for a guy that age. Very often, while on my hikes, I would talk to Walt. He'd approach me on his jog and slow down to keep pace and talk about the beauty of the forest. Sometimes, we'd talk about women. This was a subject he had many stories about. Life, or even just the forest around us. To give a few examples, as time went on, I saw Walt more frequently. In fact, one Saturday, he asked me point blank if there was anyone around the office that I liked. I explained to him that I did have my eyes on this beautiful redhead in our office. She was very shy, very sweet, and I had a lot of respect for her. All that said, I was afraid to ask her out. Walt told me I needed to tell her how I felt. He then explained how he'd lost out on someone he loved very much because of his inability to say something. This was quickly followed by a hearty laugh and an explanation about how many women he'd been with. It was weird. Seeing someone his age laugh off something that clearly affected him, but he seemed to put it all in the past, and said you can't hold on to such feelings forever. His exact words were, "There's a time to move on. You can remember, but you need to let it go." It was those words he smiled, then told me rain was coming, and sped off into the forest. Walt was a fast guy. Every time he sprinted off like this, when I finally made it over the hill, he'd be gone. Many months went by, and Walt and I continued to chat. He'd appear on my jogs pretty regularly, and at pretty random points. We chatted quite a bit, and it was nice to have the company since when I jogged, there was usually not much of anyone around. One Sunday morning, I was jumping with joy and nerves because I finally asked the girl I liked out, and as luck would have it, she accepted. I was nervous at the time, but I wanted to say thank you to Walt. It wasn't long before Walt showed up and began laughing. I asked him why he was laughing. He told me, "Son, you're smiling from ear to ear. I've seen that look before. You asked her out, didn't you?" I felt my heart jump from this sudden loudness and enthusiasm, but I nodded yes. Walt laughed and told me how happy he was for me. He then said something that I didn't really think on at the time. Upon reflection, was a bit odd. He told me she would make me a very happy guy, as with my three kids. I laughed as the way he said it, it seemed like he was joking, or at least that's how my mind interpreted it. All that said though, looking back, there was an odd assuredness in his eyes as he smiled. Walt soon changed the subject and told me he knew it would work out, as he was old and the elderly could sense things like that. He laughed further as he said he could feel it in his bones. He then said he had to go and sprinted off again. I was ecstatic, and the following Friday, I had my first date with Emily. It went off wonderfully, and I invited her on a hike the following day. She gladly accepted, and I said with a smile, "I can't wait for you to meet my friend, Walt. I can't wait for you to meet my friend Walt. He's a kind old soul, and he often meets up with me on my hikes." She seemed enthusiastic, and the next day, when we went on a hike, we spent about half the day out there, but I never saw Walt. It began raining, so we went back to the car and got out of the rain. As I was driving home, Emily told me she had a great time, and she hoped she could meet Walt sometime, so she could thank him for giving me the courage to ask her out. I smiled and told her I wanted to thank him too. I brought Emily home and we agreed to have another date the following Friday. Sunday morning, I got up and went on a jog, as I usually do the other weekend. I was jogging along the path when, from another path, Walt came up to me, with his usual smile and laugh. I told him about Emily and how she hoped to meet him someday. He kept smiling and then apologized for missing us the day before. He wasn't feeling himself, but he hoped to meet her someday as well. We jogged quietly for a bit before Walt spoke up. "It really renews me with cheer and energy to see someone your age finding someone for them." I laughed and told him it was still early, but I really liked Emily, and we seemed to be getting along just fine. Walt simply smiled and patted me on the back, reassuring me it would work out. The rest of the walk was quiet until he told me he'd talk to me again soon. He had to go get some dinner. He sprinted off with a smile and I waved goodbye before taking another trail back toward my car. The following week's date went wonderfully with Emily. We spent the weekend hiking each day. Once again, Walt wasn't there. I felt worried and I believed Emily could sense this as she told me that she's sure he is fine. I nodded my head in agreement and enjoyed the rest of our hike. A few months went by and it was around Christmas when Emily said she wanted to meet her parents. I was super nervous about this for obvious reasons. This meant things were getting serious, which I was quite happy about, but also meeting the parents was a big step. I agreed though, as I was becoming quite sure this woman could be the one. It was on my last solo hike when I ran into Walt again. I asked him if he was okay, and explained how I'd feared the worst as I hadn't seen him in a bit, but at the same time, I hadn't had a chance to hike as often, as work had kept me slammed the past few months. Walt laughed and said he was fine, and then with a sly look said, "So, when are you gonna pop the question?" I remember almost tripping before regaining my balance and stopping. I was so taken aback by the question and I wasn't even sure how to answer. Walt continued to jog into place as he laughed. "I told you, son. Us elderly, we can feel it in our bones." I told him about how I was going to meet her parents soon, and then I explained how I was ring shopping, but I hadn't told Emily that for obvious reasons. Walt smiled and said, "Be here the next Sunday you are available, and I'd love to meet her." So I did just that. A couple of weeks after meeting Emily's parents, we made a hike through the forest. It was then Walt came up to us and laughed. He spoke about how it was a pleasure to meet the woman who'd brought so much joy to his good friend. She seemed shy, but I was happy she finally got to meet Walt. We all chatted as we jogged, and although I hadn't said anything, I had planned to pop the question that day. I had bought the ring for Emily after meeting her parents went so well. I asked her family for permission and they granted me their blessing. It was as I was about to go to a high point in the forest, where her family would meet us at, that Walt pulled me to the side. I asked him if he was okay and he said of course. He then handed me an address with a smile. He also gave me a number. He explained that he had been living alone for years and he had something for me being such a good friend. I told him his friendship was enough, but he insisted I visit his cabin and gave me instructions on where to find a safe he'd buried. He asked that I come alone on whatever day I choose to come by. He said he wouldn't need a heads up, and also, thank you. It was after this that he sprinted off, having congratulated us both on our relationship, and also saying he was very blessed to have met Emily. I took Emily to the spot I wanted to propose to her, and upon getting there, her eyes teared up at seeing her family. I think she suspected, and after getting down on one knee, I proposed to her as the sunset was in the distance. She agreed, and it was soon after that we set a date. A week later, I went to Walt's cabin and knocked on the door. I called for Walt and didn't hear anything. I tried the door and it was unlocked. I soon walked around calling for Walt. Worried, I searched the cabin. It's when I went upstairs that I found Walt, passed out, a smile on his face, and, sadly, no longer breathing. Next to him was a note addressed to me. I felt myself tearing up and feeling horrible as I called 911. They showed up soon enough and I spoke with them about everything I knew. Eventually, it would come out that he passed away in his sleep peacefully. His body had simply let things go. In the note he had given me, he explained how much joy his final days of life had been after meeting me. He explained his own life and having met Emily had really brightened his last days. He told me to hold on to her, and he also mentioned I needed to check the safe he'd buried. I did eventually go back to his cabin when it was okay to go again, and I dug up an old safe. I input the code he had given me, and in the safe was a watch. It was an old watch he'd apparently kept in his family for generations. He didn't have anyone else to pass it on to. He wanted me to have it. I kept the watch, and a couple of years after marrying Emily, she and I had our first kid. It was a little boy who we named Walt, in honor of our old friend. We now have three kids, and not a day goes by where I'm not thankful to have met the older gentleman in Sequoia National Forest. Thank you, Walt, for everything. I work with the Forestry Service in Black Hills National Forest. I've been doing so for only 5 years, and in that time, I've grown to love my job. I meet a lot of interesting characters at this job and work with even more interesting ones. I suppose I should start by saying you can call me Tom, although that's not my real name. About 3 years into my job, I met a homeless man by the name of Gene, who came up to me one morning complaining about his head. He said things in the sky gave him headaches every night. I didn't think much of this and asked if I could get him an aspirin or something. I also double-checked he hadn't been drinking, to which he scoffingly told me he doesn't drink anything outside of water. Gene wasn't the friendliest guy, but he didn't feel dangerous either. I suppose I could be partly to blame, as although I helped him, I think he could tell I wasn't buying the story about things in the sky giving him a headache. I probably wasn't the first person to act this way toward him either, and thinking on that, I began to feel somewhat guilty. I asked him to tell me about the things in the sky, so I gave him some aspirin and some water. He eyed me for a moment, clearly suspicious that I was looking to make fun of him, but I kept a straight and serious face in an attempt to reassure him I had no such plans. After a minute or two of awkward silence, he finally opened up to me. Gene explained that he tried to sleep where he could at night, but, generally, he was near or around a forest. Every night, he would say he would see these things in the sky. He likened them to black orbs and explained that they would follow him. He then went on to tell me, as he would try to sleep, he would hear them whispering things to him. It was always something negative. He explained they knew things about him and his life, and they shouldn't know these things. They would constantly like just berate him over his past mistakes. He was haunted by these things. I looked on with genuine concern as he continued to speak on these things stalking him every night in the forest. The way Gene explained it, he'd lost his family in a car accident many years ago, in which he was a bit drowsy. These things knew this, and they'd constantly remind him of this and any and all other mistakes he had ever made, down to the tiniest. Now, I wasn't sure what to believe in Gene's story, but the look on his face seemed to be of genuine concern over whatever had been stalking him. I told him I'd look into things, and maybe I could watch him at night. I'm pretty sure he didn't believe that I'd look into this, and he probably thought I was just trying to get rid of him. I don't blame him for thinking this, as part of me was quite skeptical of the whole debacle, but I was already so intrigued, so I figured I would look into it. What was the worst that could happen? That it wasn't real and that he was maybe just schizophrenic. So it was I came back later, and to check on Jean. I told him to meet me at the station and we could wander the forest and check things out together. I wasn't stupid. I brought a weapon in case Jean tried to pull something or we found something out there that might attack us, but I wanted to give Jean the benefit of a doubt. So we met up that night. At first glance, Jean looked shocked, probably because I actually showed up. As we walked and chatted, however, he seemed to calm a bit. After a few hours, he asked me what time it was. I looked at my watch and told him it was around 11 p.m. His response? Just one word. Soon. We walked until we reached an open space. It was there we waited. We waited here for about 2 hours and I felt myself dozing off when I heard whispering. I opened my eyes and saw something that left me in complete disbelief. Floating above us were these strange, black orb-like figures. I'm not even sure how to define them completely. When I awoke a bit more, I noticed there was a strange whispering from them. I won't share what was said. It was deeply personal, and no one could have known about it. Jean was already shouting into the sky and seemed to be trying to shoo these things away. It obviously wasn't working, and I soon asked him to follow me. We ran as fast as we could back to the station and I let him inside before locking the door behind us. I tried the lights, but they were having issues. The power in the station was all over the place and I wasn't really sure what to think of it all. Soon enough, I shut the lights off and waited. Looking out the window, we could see these orbs just floating around the station. They defied explanation, and while they remained in the area, I could hear them whispering horrible things not only about my past, but just in general. They were very antagonistic, saying I'd die alone and cursing at me. The strangest part was is when I heard them, it sounded like they were whispering inside my own head. I was unnerved and spent the remainder of the night in the station with Jean. The next morning I let him out and I headed out for my truck, waiting for my boss to arrive. When he finally did, I acted as though I had just arrived, but I explained I wasn't feeling the best. I left early that day on the grounds that I was sick. I later spoke with Jean and explained that maybe he should avoid sleeping in the forest at night. I know this wasn't the most exciting story in the world, or the scariest, but I wanted to share it, as it was a very strange thing that happened to me. I don't know what those orbs were, and I haven't stuck around the forest at night ever again. I'm not even sure I ever want to know what those things were, but it was odd, to say the least. I would like to share a quick few stories about some things I and some of the others working in the Forestry Service and White River National Forest have seen in our time on the job. They concern everyone's favorite big-footed wanderer of the woods. Now, I won't pretend to know what is or isn't out there, but I will say I do believe in Bigfoot. Why, do you ask? Well, I and some of my compadres have seen some things that have us all thoroughly convinced of their existence. Believe us or not, I just want to get some of our info out there. Coming into my job with the Forest Service, I had heard from some of my coworkers about a Bigfoot that was spotted the previous October. I laughed this off until one October while on the job, I'd heard something weird myself. At first, I didn't notice much. In fact, I just saw trees and assumed it was a tree for a moment, as it was very still and I was a ways from it. Then, as I turned to clean up some trash and look back, I caught it darting off into the distance. It was then I realized it wasn't a tree at all. The thing was fast, too. Like one second it was there and the next it was over the hill, and there was no way I was going to find it again after that. Another time, a few of my colleagues and I were prepping for Christmas break when we felt like we were being watched. Now, I get it. That happens out in nature, and when you are being watched, generally you can write it off as a deer or something like that. "Look over there," my supervisor shouted. I looked, and as I did, I caught this at least 9-foot tall, hairy-looking creature, turning and making a run for it. It was, once again, gone in just a few seconds' time. I don't know what to say about either of these incidents, honestly, other than I saw this with my own eyes. I know how that sounds, and I'm sorry if I didn't have a camera on hand to record any of it, but these are a couple of incidents I had while working with my team. There are plenty of other incidents they've reported. One of our workers, who we will call Jimmy, told me about a time when he was working a little late and was patrolling the forest. He saw a couple of Bigfoot throwing rocks around. He noticed them, and they left. Diane, another one of my coworkers, said she saw one while driving out to her parking spot. There also have been reports by some of the locals about supposed sightings, but no one really has a camera on them when it happens, or if they do, they can't get sufficiently close enough to really record anything worth showing. I have other stories I could tell. I just wanted to share some odd sightings while on the job, and I'm a bit of a hurry, so I'll just keep it short. I know how silly it all sounds, and if I were you, I'd be like, "Hooray, Bigfoot, you say? Really? Sure thing, buddy." All that said, I know what I witnessed at the very least, and I used to think the way I'm sure some listening to this may. Believe me or not, that's fine, but Bigfoot is definitely out there, at least in the White River National Forest, that is. I'm a female who lives near Klamath National Forest. I'm 32, but this happened to me when I was 29. I'm a very unique, happy individual, and I absolutely love both hiking and camping in the mountains. Some of my favorite moments are at night, when I can look up and see the stars, and just forget all the problems that come with life. Well, at the time this happened, I was between jobs and trying to find myself. I know how that sounds, but hey, a girl has to find herself from time to time, otherwise we'd be lost. Klamath National Forest is an area that I've always been able to come to when I wanted to get over things or do some deep thinking. It was a Saturday afternoon when hiking that things went very wrong for me very quickly. I was hiking through the forest when I tripped over a tree root and went face first over the edge of a steep drop-off. I'm not sure how far I fell, but I was knocked out cold initially. When I awoke, it was dark and I had a bad headache. Feeling the back of my head, I noticed it was bleeding. It wasn't pouring blood, but I had a cut on my head. I tried to get up, and that's when I looked and noticed my left leg was facing the wrong direction. It makes me sick just typing this out right now, but it was at the point that I was unable to control my cool. I screamed my lungs out for hours, calling for help and begging for assistance, but I had gone far off the trails, something I regularly did at the time, and I wasn't even sure where I was after the fall itself. I had my canteen by sheer luck for what water I had left, but I'd lost the rest of my things like my phone, my backpack full of food, everything. I wasn't sure if it had been drug off by an animal or I just lost it during the fall, but I was betting on the latter. I remember laying there, my throat hurting and my body in pain. I had decided to save my strength, drink a few sips of water, and do my best not to focus on the fact that it was beginning to get very cold out. The minutes went on by and felt like hours, and as the hours went by, it felt like days. I didn't have the strength to get up and was beginning to get very cold. I remember scrounging up what I could with some leaves and trying to make a makeshift blanket over my body. I knew it wasn't going to do much. I didn't have a lot of options. I made sure to keep my head visible, and while I couldn't do much to move, every time I tried to drag myself, I was in extreme pain. I figured I could try to hang in and just focus on anything other than being cold or the pain in my body. I was afraid to sleep, but after a while, my body didn't give me a chance and I slipped away. When I awoke, I was half shocked I was alive and half terrified as it set in I was still in the same spot and no one had found me. Figuring it couldn't hurt to try, I went ahead and called for help as long as I could. Much to my dismay, I was left fearful, realizing no one had heard me or even seemed to be around. So, there I lay, as night turned to day and day to night. I would drink water sparingly where I could, and remember passing out here and there. I'd attempt to get help again, and no one would hear me calling out or screaming. I would pass out, drink water, and repeat until one night I realized I drank the last drops of water I had. At this point, I began to feel myself begin to cry. I would pass out, and then I'd wake up again, and I knew I shouldn't, as I should be retaining every bit of strength I could. But I was hungry, weak, and it was becoming more apparent that I could die here. The idea of dying alone, knowing what happened to you, or even finding you until it is too late, if they find you at all, was terrifying. I've never been so afraid in my entire life. I say it is terrifying, but the word doesn't accurately reflect the fear I felt in that moment. I don't think it's possible to accurately reflect that sort of fear either unless you've lived through a similar situation yourself or had a near-death experience, all alone out in the wilderness. It's something I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy, and it's something that terrifies me just from reflecting upon it. I stayed awake for as long as I could, and the last thing I saw before passing out again was the sun beginning to come up, as the area around me was growing brighter once again. I tried to breathe, I tried to remain calm, I tried to keep awake, and I didn't have the energy to scream much anymore. The next day went by and I had no help. I just lay there and tried to keep halfway there. I tried to scream anyway, but I had no voice and my throat was parched. So I basically had a very low crackle for a voice. Nothing anyone would hear from far away. I thought about my family as I lay there that night. I prayed that if God existed, he would take care of my family and have them gain closure by finding my body sooner or later. I knew it would hurt them initially, but I also knew it would hurt worse never knowing what happened to me. I apologized to all I have ever wronged, even though they weren't around to hear me. I reflected on the things I was sad that I never got to do. I always thought I'd find a guy, get married, and travel the world. That sort of fanciful dream that you know everyone has, but it looks like it may or may never happen. I believe every woman has had or thought in some manner at some point that this would be a perfect life. I began reflecting what it would be like, and before I knew it, I was passed out again. There was a strange comfort in that moment. Part of me truly believed I was going to die, and I had accepted it in that moment. Another part of me wasn't even aware while thinking that I'd passed out. I remember during a dream I had about my potential life with my imaginary future husband, during the vows, a loud voice overtook everything. It was like a whirring mixed with talking, and there was a strange gust of wind. I remember trying to scream in the dream, but no one heard me over the wind and whirring. I remember being strangely mad that my imaginary dream wedding was being ruined by this weird noise and strange wind. Then I remember waking up in shock and thrashing my arms around. A strange man and woman were trying to hold me down and calm me down. They were trying to reassure me I'd be fine. It took me a second, but then it dawned on me. I was in a helicopter, and these strange men and women were able to help me as they had found me. I kept thinking it was a dream and I was dead, and I was asking if I was dead. They kept laughing and holding my hand and assuring me that I wasn't going to die. It was at that moment I broke down completely, crying my eyes out, and uncontrollably saying thank you again and again. I remember one of the medics smiling and telling me, "You're welcome," and they were glad I was awake, alert, and aware. I spent the next month in the hospital just being checked on and regaining my fluids, rehabbing, and getting food back into my body. I was pretty skinny when they found me, and I was dehydrated, so they had to monitor me pretty closely. I'm alive today because these brave men and women searching for me found me. My family had reported me missing when I hadn't returned to work after my vacation, and I was out almost a week in the wild. I will never forget the fear I felt just before accepting that I was going to die. I will never forget that peace I felt in the acceptance and wait for death. And I'll never forget the elation I felt when I woke up to find my saviors who ruined my dream wedding, smiling at me and reassuring me that I would live and it would be okay. Most of all, I would never take any day of my life for granted, ever again. My name is Charlene, and I'm a 20-year-old woman who lives near Payette National Forest in Idaho. Yeah, that's right. We have forests too. Anyway, I would like to share with you a story about a terrifying experience I had when I was 18 in jogging the trails of the forest. Now, I am not an outdoorsy type of girl. I only really started visiting Payette National Forest on my own when I was 18 and wanted to improve my physical fitness. I'm not a heavyset girl, but I wasn't the most active at the time either. Before doing a morning hike in the area, I rarely wandered outside my apartment and would only be in this area when visiting my family when I was younger. So to get to the point, I wasn't expecting to wind up in the situation I wound up in. My first day jogging was in late October. I don't love the heat, so I don't really want to do any heavy jogging during the summer months. The day went beautifully, and something about being out there, and maybe also my runner's high or jogger's high depending on if you want to look at it that way, made me think, I'm going to make this a regular thing for sure. Well, that's just what I did. I spent every morning jogging except for Sundays. Sunday was my break day. Every single morning I found something to appreciate or love entirely about the forest. It was a truly beautiful area, and a place that, despite my experience, I'd highly recommend people to visit. It was around the beginning of December that my jogs became less relaxing. So, jogging my normal route at this point, I hear something weird. It's a snapping, like something stepping on a twig or a stick. I stop and look behind me while jogging. I don't see anything, so I just keep jogging. A few minutes later, I hear a very loud snapping sound again. This makes me jump and I almost lose my balance. Regaining my balance, I look into the woods and again I see nothing. I'm feeling uneasy, but I haven't seen anyone or anything, so I'm assuming it could be a stick falling or a really well camouflaged animal of some kind. I go through the rest of my morning jog without a hitch. Soon enough, I find myself brushing off the earlier sounds. I mean, I was jogging through a national forest, so any number of things could have caused the sound. To be safe, I changed my schedule up a bit and took the rest of the week off. The following Monday, I was up, excited and back at it again. It was around this time I began to feel like I was being watched. I couldn't shake this feeling, and it didn't help that once again, I'd hear sticks and twigs snapping every now and again. Determined not to let it ruin my run, I continued jogging day after day until finally, it was Saturday. It was my last day of jogging for the week. And nothing weird had happened since the previous Monday. Feeling rather comfortable, I began to jog. While jogging, I felt my phone vibrate. It was chilly, so I wore a hoodie, and as such, I had my phone on me. Anyway, checking my phone, I realized I had an email. I didn't have the best reception, so I figured I would check it later and continue jogging for now. Bzzz. Bzzz. My phone went off again. This time, I stopped and checked the phone. I had barely any signal and didn't think I'd be able to check my email, but I was able to. It was at that moment I felt myself freeze in fear. I had been sent two videos. The first of was me jogging the prior Monday. The second was a video of me sometime during this jog. I freaked out and turned to look around, but there was no one around. Whoever recorded the videos had been following me from close behind. I looked closely, and after seeing no one, I grew afraid and tried to sprint back down the trail and toward the direction of my car. I also dialed 911 and didn't stop running. When the dispatcher answered, I tried to calmly give my situation, but I needed to stop and breathe so she could understand me. I caught my breath and began to explain my situation again. Right around that time, I heard whistling in my direction. I turned around and jumped as a man in heavy amounts of camo and face paint held a knife and smiled at me just before sprinting toward me. I screamed and ran as fast as I could. I lost my phone as the man tackled me to the ground. I remember throwing an elbow back and busting him in the nose before scrambling to my feet. I saw a knife fly by me and off bounce a rock and into the ditch. I screamed and continued to run with the energy I still had. I felt my lungs burning and my body fell over, perhaps out of fear or maybe just exhaustion. Didn't take long for the man to catch up, and while I tried to kick him in the nuts, he caught my leg and took me to the ground. He put his weight on top of me, and I'll never forget his smile. He whispered, "Shh, shh, 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 shh," into my ear before pulling an even longer knife out than the one that he had thrown at me. He put it at my neck. The man smiled and told me to quiet down. He said he was going to rape me, and then he was going to take me away, cut on me, and rape me some more. Until I died, or he got bored of me, and then he would feed me to his pigs. I tried to fight, but he had a very distinct weight advantage over me. I remember him working one hand towards his pants while holding my hands with his other arm. He's kept his weight on me the entire time, but I kept squirming for dear life and screaming. Then I heard him unzip his pants, and I lost it. I don't know where I got this strength, and I don't remember as much as I think I may have blacked out, at least partially. I came to with the man on his knees screaming. I then remember realizing I consistently was kicking him in the nuts. Even upon realizing, I couldn't stop my leg as the reaction was practically automatic. I then remember being told to freeze and the police arrived. Not too long after that, I gave them what I could remember of my story and explained how I didn't remember all of it. I semi-blacked out. I sent them the videos and, you know, they did the rest. The man is in prison to this day. I was terrified, but I fought back with everything, even when it seemed there was no hope left. I now bring Mace with me everywhere I go, and I'm not like naive like I used to be. I'm much more careful. I recommend everyone have some form of protection on them when jogging, especially in the early hours when a lot of people are sleeping or not out yet. I still jog the trails, but I'm a lot safer about it today. The man who attacked me isn't a problem any longer, and I'm grateful to be here today. Thanks for listening to these creepy, downright strange National Forest stories. It has always been a dream of mine to be a park ranger or a forestry service person. I don't know, I just really love nature, especially the parks. If you enjoyed these stories, please be sure to hit that like button as it helps me out a ton. If you're new to the channel, why not join the swamp, subscribe, and turn on notifications to never miss a new video, as I upload them almost every single day, and all things natural and supernatural. If you have a story you would like to share in a future video, whether it's a National Forest story or something different, be sure to submit it at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I'd love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. It's stories like yours that help keep this channel going. If you're not aware, you can download your favorite Swamp Dweller Scary Stories from iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, Podbean, and just about every other major podcasting platform you can find. Thank you guys, as always, for supporting this channel. It's honestly amazing that you guys do so much for me. If you made it all the way to the end, today's code word is Swampy Christmas. Comment that down below to let me know you made it to the end and to, of course, confuse anybody who didn't. I love seeing how unique and creative you guys get with these responses. It's pretty funny. I'll see you guys soon with another creepy video.